What's going on, people? Welcome to the post-game number crunch. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting, creator of the Timberwolves newsletter, Howls and Growls, and this podcast is proudly brought to you by Canis Hoopus and SB Nation. We have a special edition of the number crunch today. I'm joined by Jack Borman, site manager over at Howls and Growls. We're going to go through the post-game, obviously in the same way that we always do over at Number Crunch, with a couple of numbers to anchor us, and then we are going to do some trade deadline stuff as well. So Jack, it's good to see you again, good to talk. Not the best game to talk about, but it is good to see your face sitting across from me.
No, I'm very happy to see you. I was pleased with being introduced as the site manager of Howls and Growls, because it is
I meant Canis Hoopus, but that's what I meant. Yes, just a
fantastic operation that has been getting me through this NBA season. but I'm looking, I wish everybody could see the beautiful sunburnt face that I'm seeing as it's 8 degrees outside. But yeah, kind of a dumpster fire game, but, and really killed every positive vibe that there was today.
Yeah,
I mean, man, oh man, the vibes could not have been higher coming into this game, but, leave it to the Memphis Grizzlies to figure out how to fuck around and ruin that vibe, man.
Yeah, it's always a coin flip when you play the Grizzlies, and this coin landed on really annoying and really bad, and that has been the case too many times over the last 10 months against the Grizzlies. But overall, like you said, it was a really good day. Obviously, Anthony Edwards is an all-star officially. Mike Conley played his first game, which probably wasn't the best introduction in terms of individual play or the team as a whole. But like I said at the top, we're going to do the same sort of program here where we start with a number. I want to get your number first and kind of lead us away here. It's the first time I've had a guest on the Number Crunch, so, you know, lead us away here, Jack.
Yeah, so for me, the number I have is 72. The Timberwolves gave us 72 points in the paint. That is tied for the second most. With the win that they had against Denver on February 5th. So that was at Target Center. I believe that was on Sunday, against the Nuggets team that did not have all of their starters, or four of their five starters. Rudy Gobert set the tone for this early in the game, I thought. You know, Gobert, to his credit, has been absolutely tremendous defensively for the better part of the last month and a half. But tonight was just really timid, shied away from getting up and really contesting and making a difference at the rim tonight, I thought. I thought, you know, he was pretty apathetic and soft, and that really set the tone for the entire Timberwolves defense. Outside of, you know, Mike Conley doing a fantastic job fighting around screens, I think Conley drew three or four illegal screens. But outside of Mike, nobody wanted to sit down and get in a guarding position and try to at least help Gobert to make sure that there weren't so many, you know, unabated guys getting into the paint. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, Rudy Gobert is a supermax player, right? He gets paid almost $50 million a year just to dominate defensively. Like, he does not get paid to score points offensively. And, you know, it's just really hard for the Timberwolves to win games right now without Karl Anthony Towns when Gobert turns into a liability defensively. And thankfully for the Wolves, there have been very few games when that has happened. But obviously giving up 72 points in the paint on a night that Gobert does play is pretty brutal. I mean, you look at the one game they did play, or they did give up more than this, was oddly enough, was that really dominant win over the Pacers, where they only gave up 101 points. So they gave up 101 points and 74 of them came in the paint, which is insane for an NBA team to only score 27 points outside the paint. But, yeah, just a real stinker, at all three levels of the Wolves defense tonight.
Yeah, I mean, 26 of 34 Memphis from inside the paint or at the rim, 11 of 21 in that short mid-range area, which was the, you know, the floater range. And I thought that they really hammered that area that they were going to short roll in pick and roll and then shoot floaters immediately, or Jar was going to get downhill and then get into his floater range, which he does every night. But I think it was pretty clearly a game plan that they were going to go at Rudy Gobert and expose the fact that they're playing drop coverage and that he's likely to drop pretty deep into the paint, especially with Morant there, who's obviously insane attacking downhill and loves to get all the way to the rim. I just thought that it was a great game plan, but there wasn't enough adjustments from Minnesota, both in terms of Gobert himself, the point of attack defenders. I thought Jaden had a really bad night as a point of attack defender, which is rare for him. Like you said, Conley was pretty good, but Ant was bad again as well as a point of attack guy. So I just think that Taylor Jenkins and the coaching staff game plan really well. Minnesota and Chris Finch probably didn't adjust to that game plan very quickly. And then the players probably didn't do what Chris Finch wanted them to do, which would be to take that half step up and stop the floaters. And even then, even when they did take that half step up, there was someone cutting back from the backside or cutting, you know, along the baseline who got a little dump off pass. So as much as I want to lament the Timberwolves, and I think that they should be lamented for their defensive effort in this game, I thought Memphis really just game planned the shit out of them in this game. And it kind of is a little bit scary when you think that this is a team that they really could play in the playoffs and are going to have to try and beat four times. And we've seen this season that they can beat them, and that over the last 2 years, these two teams have kind of been going back and forth. But man, this just felt like a game where they got out-coached and out-executed, you know, defensively or in Memphis's case, offensively, pretty much for the whole game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think for the Wolves, like, if you just look at the breakdown of where these shots are coming from, the shot distribution was surprisingly very similar between these two teams. Like, Memphis shot 21 shots in that short mid-range area. The Wolves shot 19. Memphis, you know, shoots 52%. The Wolves shoot 37%. I mean, similar thing at the rim where, you know, Minnesota's 18 of 31 at the rim and Memphis is 16 of 34. I mean, it was just, you know, two different classes of finishing when you get inside the paint there. And then, you know, then the big one too, like Minnesota gets 11 more threes up than Memphis. But again, like if you're going to allow Memphis to get to the free throw line, what was it, 27 times? You know, you're just going to be in for a long night. And you know, what's crazy is Minnesota had 20 fouls called on them in this game, but Memphis had 19 fouls called on them in this game. It was just a matter of like what those fouls were. Like, Memphis was fouling people before they were getting up into that shooting motion to ensure that they, you know, their drives got stopped and they didn't get to the rim. Whereas, you know, that was not the case for, that was not the case for Minnesota. Like, they're all shooting fouls. They had pretty much for the most part, or a much greater percentage of shooting fouls. And
then they don't stop fouling when they get in the bonus. That's the problem. They get touch fouls and, you know, fouls at the 3-point line and fouls on drives that aren't shooting fouls when they get into the bonus. And they just compound the errors in terms of fouling. I mean, I thought they got a bad whistle tonight, but I don't think that they earned a good whistle because they are very handsy and they have a reputation. Like, this happens every game. Like, they foul a lot every game.
Yeah, and I think the bonus call is a good point too. Like, I know PBP stats has like some good numbers on like the total number of possessions that a team spends in the bonus, and I haven't looked at that in a while, but the Wolves were like down there near the bottom in terms of like how many possessions essentially their opponents are in the bonus for. You know, and it's one thing to use your fouls, but it's another thing to use your fouls very early in the quarters, which we saw tonight from the Wolves. And I guess too, you know, like, what was disappointing was that like the Wolves had a lot of ball movement early in the game that looked really good. Everybody seemed to be moving with purpose on the offensive end, and then that just, you know, kind of inexplicably went away when the Timberwolves starters got out there for a second time, and then that avalanche kind of ensued. Just a lot of, you know, shots with limited number of passes before the shot, and we know what that means for the Wolves, and that generally means transition going the other way, or at the very least, you know, Memphis was able to generate some cross matches and then attack off of that. And when you're attacking mismatches, that's when you get the scrambles and people are over helping and fouling and being out of position. So, yeah, I think that, you know, the defense obviously was very poor, but, you know, their offense really didn't help them in that regard in terms of the way it set the defense up to kind of be playing on their heels a little bit.
Yeah, and it's not always that bad shots lead specifically just to transition opportunities, but it, like you said, it leads to cross matches in the half court. And that was my number that I had, was that Minnesota allowed 116.1 half court offensive rating for Memphis. So they scored 116.1 points per 100 possession in the half court. And that's a problem. I've come on this show before and I've explained it, that Minnesota are now 21 losses and 4 wins anytime they allow over 115 points per possession in the half court. So, like, they lose games. If they don't score in the half court, they lose games. And that's kind of, if they don't stop teams from scoring in the half court, they lose games. And that's kind of been a problem all season, not in terms of doing it, but in terms of that's really a thing that brings them down when they do have a bad night in the half court. And, I mean, right now it's just one of those games. You look at this game and it's just one of those nights where it just didn't work for them. And like you said, Gobert was an issue. Point of attack defense was an issue. And then, yeah, taking bad shots and not getting matched up in transition in the half court was a big issue as well. It's weird because Minnesota are a good team as a half court defense. That's been one of their calling cards all season. They're sixth in the league in half court defense. They allow 95.5 points per possession on aggregate this season. So it's kind of weird to see them have a bad night, but like I said, when they do have a bad night, they lose.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing that's really odd to me is why their floor is so low at times. Because they have two of the best defensive players in the league, in Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert. And I get, like, Kyle Anderson's been out a few games, Gobert's been out a few games, Mike Conley's in there, but, like, Mike Conley is playing better defense than D'Angelo Russell, and his role was exactly the same as what D'Angelo Russell did. You know, he was more that chaser. He guarded Desmond Bain, and who guards Desmond Bain every time the Wolves play the Grizzlies? D'Angelo Russell. Yeah, I mean, and the frustrating part too for me personally watching this game tonight and this entire season, honestly, is when you think about the Wolves, right? Last year they were really good at generating transition, I think that they also were very, very good finishing transition. They had a lot of very good play finishers in transition. I think this year, when you look at it, the Timberwolves have largely been a very poor transition team. They're 20th in the league in an offensive rating in transition, which is about 114.
And that's gone up a lot recently. Like, they were in the bottom five for a long time.
It has. And you think about tonight, they had an offensive rating of 84 in the half court, which is the 10th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass. And the crazy thing for the Timberwolves is half of their live ball defensive rebounds turned into transition. That's like a remarkable, incredibly good mark. I would venture to guess that the like league average frequency is about 29-30% of live ball rebounds turn into transition opportunities. And that was 50% for the Wolves tonight. So almost, you know, twice as good as what the average is. And they only scored, you know, their offensive rating off of those was 79. So even worse than what it was off of steals. So the Wolves just, I don't know. I think that, you know, I didn't really talk about it a whole lot because it's not really something like leading up to the trade deadline, because it's not something that, you know, that I think you need to go out and like explicitly address necessarily, than it is just by like telling your guys to focus more on like getting out in transition and, you know, and just like really filling lanes hard and all that. But like, you know, that's going to be a problem for the Wolves. Like, you know, yes, you know, a game in the half court is obviously to their advantage just because they've been a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense this year in the half court. And we obviously see more half court basketball in the playoffs, but man, like, it's going to be really hard for them to win games, and especially down the stretch of the season. They have a really tough schedule the rest of the way against good teams if you can't finish in transition. And that's something where Malik Beasley was fantastic for Minnesota, both as a guy that would get up and yam that thing, and as a guy that would space to the corners and be shot ready and knock things down really, really well in transition. Like Jalen Noel has been a guy that's done a really good job of finishing in transition this year. Obviously Anthony Edwards, but outside of those guys, like, I don't really know who's been a factor in transition. I guess you could put Jaden McDaniels in there as well. Just, he's got that really nice where he like jumps up and then kind of does the like double clutch and like goes like, does kind of like,
kind of waits
like
for them to go past.
Like an underhand windmill and just kind of like ducks under the guy and lays it in. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. So that's going to be something that I'm watching this year too, is like when they, or the rest of the way. And like Mike Conley is a better athlete than D'Angelo Russell, in terms of like his speed and acceleration, in the open court.
And he's a transition shooter as well, which D'Lo was a little bit as well, but he likes that transition three. We saw him take one pull up tonight,
but it was
and
more
then we
pull
saw,
up rather than spot up, I think, for D'Lo.
But we saw one with Ant. Yeah, we saw one with Ant where Ant kind of took a live rebound and pushed up the court and then kicked it to Conley in the corner, who pump faked and then kind of reset for a three. Like, that's the kind of play that Malik Beasley did a lot, and the kind of thing that good teams do. Like, you can't, like you said, you can't. It's good to have a great half court offense, but scoring in transition theoretically should be easier, which means it's easy buckets, and they need any team. If you get easy buckets, you score more, you win more.
Right, and to steal a line from the great Jim Peterson, like, Malik Beasley was a fire starter, man, and those transition threes are fire starters. I mean, I looked at this, you know, it kind of immediately stuck out to me. So there was about 8 minutes left in the third quarter. The Timberwolves, I believe, were down four. I believe it was 77-73 on that run to start the third quarter. And Mike Conley pulls up for three in a 3-on-1 transition. It was either 3-on-1 or 3-on-2. He misses it. And then Memphis comes down and makes a three immediately after that. And so the lead, instead of it being a 1-point game, it's now a 7-point game. And from that miss on, you know, the Grizzlies outscored Minnesota, I want to say, you know, something to the tune of like 51 to 33. And that was a huge moment in the game. I'm sorry for being so slow with that math, but yeah, man, I mean, it's just like transition is going to be big. You know, especially on the nights where the defense does do its job, and I think it'll be better with Conley, but I don't know how much better it will be with Conley.
Yeah. I think it'll be better defensively, which has been a problem as well, that they're not good at stopping transition opportunities as well for other teams. And I think there was a couple of times tonight where Conley just walled a guy off slightly,
totally,
or bumped someone in transition. And like, that was just something that D'Lo didn't do. And I guess, you know, it's a good segue. Like, let's talk about the trade. Give me your initial trade thoughts. I haven't talked to you about it, so I know that you weren't certainly not a D'Lo hater. You know, a lot of people didn't like D'Lo. I know that you were a fan of D'Lo and not a stan, but a fan.
No, D'Lo. Definitely, so not like, a stan.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't threatened to like kill me or anything, so not a stan. But what did you think of the deal? Did you expect it? Was it something that kind of surprised you or what?
Yeah, I certainly was not necessarily surprised that D'Lo got moved, but I was surprised in the structure of it. I really didn't think that the Lakers were going to be a team that was interested in D'Angelo Russell. That wasn't
really
a team that we had heard.
I thought they would be, just because they're a weird purgatory team. They're not tanking or contending, and that's kind of the team that would like D'Lo's contract, I feel like.
Yeah, I think like it makes a lot of sense, but I guess when I was thinking about it, I thought the Lakers were going to be in on Fred VanVleet, certainly. And or Conley. Like, I just thought that those two guys were kind of a cut above D'Lo in terms of what the Lakers were looking for. But yeah, like it makes a lot of sense that D'Lo probably won't play point guard. Like he's going to just be an off the ball guy, shooter, who can, you know, run the show a little bit when Bron's not out there. So like, I thought it made a lot of sense. Like the Lakers did very well in that trade. As a fan of Jared Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley as well, I'm very excited that they get to play, you know, on this great stage and people kind of get to appreciate them. Like we got to when we were in Minnesota. So, or when they were in Minnesota. So in that regard, I thought it was awesome. I was thrilled, that the Timberwolves got Mike Conley. I've heard Chris Finch talk a lot, and Tim Connelly too, about habits and about how daily habits are really important. And, you know, I'm sure everybody, if you're listening to this, you've heard, you know, what John Krasinski had to say on the Barrera show on KFan about, you know, D'Angelo Russell openly kind of bemoaning Rudy Gobert, and, you know, not being afraid to throw him under the bus, like with media around, coach in front of coaches, players, et cetera. Like D'Angelo Russell, just like, I don't think he's a good teammate, really. I think he's a guy who does not seem to be about the team. And I don't necessarily think that's like a horrible thing, because I'm not going to sit here and act like D'Angelo Russell wasn't a massively important player for this team this year, and that this team would certainly be worse without him, in his contributions thus far. But like, you're surrounding Anthony Edwards with a guy who has won Teammate of the Year, who has won the Sportsmanship Award 3 times, and is a guy who knew he was getting traded, but still went out there to get a workout in just to like keep his routine and make sure, you know, his mind was right and all that before the Wolves play the Jazz on Wednesday. And like, just a super high caliber professional guy. And I think, you know, when you look at the guys that have kind of been in Anthony Edwards' ear this year, it's really taken a step forward in terms of, instead of just having the one guy like you had with Ricky Rubio and Pat Bev, you now have 3 guys in Austin Rivers, Mike Conley, and Kyle Anderson who are going to do that for him. And like in the locker room, it's Rudy Gobert, then Anthony Edwards, then Austin Rivers, Jordan McLaughlin, and Mike Conley. That's what the locker situation and the locker setup will be. Like, he's really insulated with a lot of just smart professionals who have been around this league, played around other superstars, and get what it means to really find success in this league and what it takes. So, and D'Angelo Russell hasn't, even though he's been around, he was around Kobe as a rookie. He played with Steph for half a year, and now he's going to go play with LeBron. But like, he hasn't, you know, been on teams that have found success, and he doesn't know what it takes to win. He can try and act like he does, but he doesn't. He was terrible in the playoffs last year. Like that was, you know, that was what, his second playoff series, and he was awesome in the play-in game. But like, you know, I think some of that was almost by necessity, in the sense it's like, cat's out. All right, it's go time, you know? And Anthony Edwards was, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to like get in a bag D'Lo situation, but I love it in the sense that, you know, just from like a intangibles off the floor thing. I mean, and I'm sure you have thoughts about it on the court too, but, and I think this team needs more of like a floor general, get everybody involved type of player. And the connection with Gobert is obviously very real too. So I just think he's going to be a really galvanizing guy as a connector in the locker room. And certainly that might be hard down the stretch of this season. But, you know, like, I think guys are going to gravitate towards him. You know, he's played in 72 playoff games. 72.
Yeah.
Outside of Gobert, if you add up the like number of playoff games that everyone else has played in, I don't think that would touch that or come close to it.
Yeah. Well, I think they need that galvanizing force in the locker room. Like, that stuff, it's obviously intangible, especially for us. We're not in the playing group, but I think that most fans or analysts kind of know that, like, when things get tough, like, you need a player like that in the locker room who can bind everyone together. And this end of this season is going to get tough, whether it gets tough and Minnesota win games and they end up in the playoffs or the play-in and, you know, everything feels pretty good vibes to end the season, or whether it gets tough and they lose because they're playing a bunch of really good teams on the road pretty much for the rest of the season. No matter what way that goes, you need a guy like Mike Conley in the locker room, because I think he can perk things up and set the ship back on course if things are going wrong, and he can keep the vibes high and just kind of keep everyone locked in if things are going well, and not let everyone, I mean, to use a D-Lo quote, to not let everyone get too high or get too low, you know, like
one more for the road.
Yeah, it's strange that Mike Conley feels like he brings that mantra more than D'Lo actually did, who kind of epitomized the volatility that this team still has. I mean, we saw it tonight, but this team all season has been super volatile, really, really good or really, really bad, sometimes in between that, but there's really no through line that you can point to for this season for the average performance of Minnesota, because it just jumps so high or so low depending on, you know, any given night. So I think that consistency, not just as a player, I mean, D'Lo's been a better in a vacuum player than Conley this season, but in terms of stability, in terms of what he's going to give you every night, in terms of the things that he knows he does well and the things that he thinks he does well, those two things line up, where I think D'Lo kind of, sometimes that was a bit skew-iff in terms of what he wanted to be and what he actually was. And I think Conley knows who he is, and this team at point guard, I think, really needs someone who knows who they are, knows who the team is, and knows who the best players are. And, I mean, you kind of touched on something a little bit earlier to do with the play-in, but D'Lo has always struck me as a guy who needs to be a second option or a first option, and then he can play really well. Those teams are probably not going to be that good, but for him to be the best version of himself, he needs to be a first or a second option, and for the last 2 months, we've seen that can work. He's been really good, but Kat's going to come back eventually. Rudy is probably supposed to be a little bit better or a lot better offensively, even though he does have his warts that we all know. But I think that at some point they need to find a way to balance out the hierarchy both on and off the court. And Conley he seems like at least a bridge between getting the long-term guy who's going to do that, whoever this future point guard is, and getting rid of D'Lo. You need to find someone who could bridge that gap, and at least you're going to get maybe, you know, at least 60 games out of Conley.
Yeah, I think the way that I think about it too is it helps you make a decision of what Anthony Edwards is going to be, right?
Which is so important.
So Anthony Edwards is taking this leap, right? And Mike O'Hagan, he's been an awesome guy at Canis this year.
Shout out, Mike. He's so good.
I love Mike. And Mike wrote an awesome article this year about like one of the great parts about Anthony Edwards is that we still don't know what he's going to be, mm-hmm. you know? And what's fun about him becoming a star is we kind of get to find out what he is going to be in terms of an offensive player. Like, he could become this Luka Harden type guy, or he could just be like a Bradley Beal type where, you know, he's just like a hitman, you know, and Finch is like, hey man, go kill this dude in the half court. And Ant's like, got it. And just goes after and relentlessly hunts after people for buckets. You know, like there's kind of these two paths that he can go on. And Conley will help you figure that out. Like, if Anthony Edwards plays considerably worse with Mike Conley than he did with D'Angelo Russell, then I think maybe you roll without a point guard and you just surround Ant with like a bunch of kind of like, I don't want to say Kyle Anderson types, but Kyle Anderson types of like,
I would love four Kyle Andersons like, and Anthony Edwards.
These like secondary ball handler guys who are just unselfish, but also kind of understand when they need to shoot it or make a quick decision or get Ant the ball again. And while Mike Conley serves as that guy that can help the Wolves figure out what Ant's going to be, he's also hopefully instilling really good habits in him and maximizing your return on the Gobert investment. So when you think about it in terms of how the young guys need to develop around Anthony Edwards, or just more plainly, like how Anthony Edwards needs to develop while also, you know, trying to maximize this Cat Gobert window too, I guess, I don't know that you could have gotten a better guy than Mike Conley. And I also want to put out there too, like, the Wolves got 3 second round picks, and that may seem like nothing, but like Bones Highland went for 2 seconds. And I think, you know, that might say more about like Bones Highland than what you can get for 2 seconds, but that's not nothing, you know, like that could be really useful for the Wolves in case Wendell Moore doesn't work out, or, you know, like Luka Garza just like isn't a guy, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Or, you know, you can turn two seconds or 3 seconds into a first, or you can buy a second round. You know, there's a lot of different optionality that
or you can
you.
Just draft players in the second round, like Tim Conley's specialty for a while now.
Yeah, and the other thing too that I think is important about this trade is Nikhil Alexander-Walker was not just a throw-in to get the Jazz under the luxury tax.
Minnesota, I was surprised we didn't see him in this game when I was, because I thought they might run him in Austin, that three guard lineup that they run, and Austin had a bad game.
Yeah, and Mike texted us this in a group chat that we have with a few people, and Mike was like, Austin Rivers is doing a great job of explaining why Pat Beverly should get a job.
Yeah,
you know, like it was just a bad Austin
Rivers. He's out here
game.
Putting his resume on Indeed for him.
Yeah, dude, and like that, I was surprised that he didn't turn to Nikhil Alexander Walker there. I get it, like it's his first game back from a suspension. You kind of want to let him play into it, but at the same time, like he's not a star or a guy that, you know, you just get a ton of leash with, especially if you're only playing 17, 18, 20 minutes a game, whatever it is. But Nikhil Alexander Walker, man, last year of a rookie contract, you think you could get him like 2 for 10 or 2 for 12 or some type of deal done, in restricted free agency, and kind of see what you have there. Like Tim Connolly last night, on Zoom, made it very clear that he sees him as a 1, a 2, or a 3, as a guy that can kind of fill any role. Chris Finch pushed for Nikhil Alexander Walker to be in the trade. Like Rudy Gay could have been in that trade and would have saved the Jazz even more money. But
and then they could have just waived him instead of Bryn Forbes, or, you know, waived Bryn Forbes and just sat Gay on the bench. Like,
yeah, and who knows if and the other thing with Gay too, Gay has another year on his contract and would be another tradable contract so that you wouldn't have to use the Torian Prince or someone like that. So like there's plenty of a valid argument for getting a Rudy Gay. But they went for Nikhil Alexander Walker, and I like it a lot. You know, I liked him coming out of the draft. I didn't love him. I wasn't as high on him as some other people were. But you know, a guy who's, you know, 6'5", has a really long, you know, 6'11"-ish wingspan, can defend multiple positions. And if he's shooting threes the way he has been this year, I think over 40%, obviously small sample, but, I also like his passing instincts too, from what I've seen today, in the last, you know, 48 hours. So I'm not saying that he should take anybody's spot in the rotation right now, but I will say that I do think he could become, you know, a guy where we look back at this trade, like, oh, that's how we got Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Mm, yeah.
And D'Angelo Russell is an expiring contract. Like, last thing I'll say about the trade, I thought Tim Connolly did a fantastic job in terms of getting value for D'Lo. Like, if you would have told me that you could have gotten Conley without having to pay something and then get 3 second round picks and a guy in a rookie contract that you can take a flyer on that Chris Finch likes and has coached before, I would say that's a hell of a job. And I've, like, Gobert trade was what it was. I think it's a pretty clear, you know, you lost that trade. But I've liked every single one of Tim Connolly's moves outside of that.
Yeah, it's like this big shadow, like, kind of looming over a bunch of little really nice moves. Like, and like you said, I think that he won the gamble that he took as well. And the gamble was that he could get D'Lo back into the mix and that he would play pretty good this season, and they would be able to get more for him than they would have got in the offseason. I know he didn't have a lot of takers in the offseason, but like he could have traded him in the offseason. They could have found a way to dump D'Lo as in a full-blown salary dump, whether they had to include someone else in that deal, or, you know, they would have found a way to move D'Lo if they absolutely wanted to do that before the season started. But I think that Conley kind of took the risk that they could get D'Lo back into the mix and that he would boost his value from the floor that it was on after the playoffs last season, and, you know, ended up getting 3 second-round picks and a young player and a guy who's going to run the offense for the rest of the season. So I think it's obviously not the flashiest deal. You know, Alexander Walker hasn't been as good as a lot of people thought he was. Conley's old. Second-round picks don't have that sort of shine on them that the first-round picks do, but I don't know what people could expect. Like, D'Lo's an expiring contract, overpaid player, a player with a bad reputation around the league, and they turned him into 5 assets, and at least one of which will help them this season, and maybe 2 in terms of Alexander Walker as well. So, I think it's a huge win.
And you could make an argument, too, that, like, because of the return, they didn't feel they needed to trade Naz Reid or Jalen Noel.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's going to help them this season too. And this season is still very important. For sure. It's not a write off in terms of, you know, they can't do anything, but they're not going to be a top 4 seed like they probably thought they could or should be. But this season's still very much alive. They need to win every game. I'm annoyed right now that they lost to the Grizzlies and we're in the 59th game, and that's a good thing because that means that the season is still well and truly alive. And if this season is well and truly alive, then they need your Naz Reid. They need Jalen Noel, who's looked awesome all of a sudden again. And they need Mike Conley to insulate the hole that's left by D'Lo.
Yeah, and I think they could finish as a top 4 seed, honestly.
They need some teams to start losing games. They need Kevin Durant to not go to the Phoenix Suns would be helpful.
Well, I hate to say it, but like Kevin Durant's not going to play potentially until March. That team has no depth. And if Devin Booker...
I don't think they care about being a good seed. They're just going to win the championship.
And that's kind of my point. Like, if Devin Booker isn't 100%, he's not going to play. If Chris Paul isn't 100%, he's going to play. I haven't seen a player that looks like they hate their life more than DeAndre Ayton this year. Like, and I'm sure that would change. But, like, I don't trust that guy as far as I can throw him. And the other thing, too, like, think about Dallas, right? Like, Luka's starting to get banged up now. Like, and that team outside of Kyrie and Luka and Maxi Kleba sucks. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't like any other player on that team. Like Josh Green, okay, cool. You can have him. Like that's fun. I don't like any other player on that team. I think Christian Wood is overrated. I mean, and then the Kings. Yeah. I mean, look at the Kings division.
The Kings are the team.
The Lakers, the Suns, the Warriors. Like that is just murderer's row. And then two, like the Pelicans, like Zion's not going to stop being fat anytime soon. Like with all due respect, like Zion's a fantastic player, but like his weight is a problem, man. Like it's a foot or a knee or now a hamstring. Like one thing if it was a shoulder injury or something, but like, I don't know, man. And so there's a lot of, you know, concern and uncertainty, and Zion obviously is probably a bigger, you know, shot in the arm than Cat would be, but you know, like outside of the Suns, like I think the Wolves are getting, you know, the best addition back in Karl Anthony Towns, and it sounds like Carl's mm-hmm. going to be ready to go. There are some rumblings, you know, kind of game of telephone that kind of gets back to you down the line that, you know, Carl hopefully is going to be ready to go after the All-Star break.
He's kind of involved in a lot more now and he's with the team on the road. So,
yeah. And so like knock on wood, like if he's able to go right away out the gate of the All-Star break, like, and the Wolves are able to go, you know, 2-1 of these last 3 games, it's go time and you're 2 games above 500. That would probably put you around the 6-7 line. You would think that the Wolves will stay out of the play-in. You would hope. But I don't know. I think anything less than, I think if you're in the play-in tournament, that's a failure.
If I had to put my money on it right now, I'd say that they're in the play-in tournament, but I do see the way out. I think the Kings are the team. I mean, I don't know how much I trust Dallas, but they had a few games lead already. They're currently destroying the Kings, but the Kings are now 4-6 in their last 10. Like that's the team that kind of the shine is starting to wear off them a little bit. They're in that division of death now. And I feel like the Kings are the team that could free fall and that vaults Minnesota into the top six. Because I think Minnesota are the team that are... I think they'll be seventh waiting for someone to stumble and they'll be able to take over. But they do need someone to stumble because that's the position their slow start has put them in.
Yeah, and so you look at teams that have the most difficult schedules left. LA, the Clippers are number two. Sacramento is number three. Phoenix is number four. And those are three teams that are right above them in the standings.
And where are Minnesota in that?
Minnesota's 11th. But you look at a team like New Orleans, they have the third easiest schedule. The Lakers, they have the seventh easiest schedule. Memphis, they have the 10th easiest schedule. And then Golden State is right in the middle. Same with Portland. So, you know, it's like people have gotten mad at me tweeting from the Canis Twitter account this year, just talking about how many stupid, terrible losses there have been and how long the season is. But like every game matters the same. Like I don't like the people who try to tell me, you know, game 82 means way more than game, you know, 37. Yeah, maybe to the players it does, but the standings do not discriminate, you know? Yeah. And people want to just say like, oh, well, the Wolves have been better against good teams this year. Do you want to trust that that continues, or would you rather have like four or five other wins in your pocket, you know?
Yeah. And the play-ins are shit. So, the play-ins are shit show. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter how good you are if you can be eliminated by a team in one game or in two games, because it's not the playoffs.
And you think of the volatility of this team, man. Like, the Wolves got lucky in the play-in game last year, I think.
I was about to say, the Clippers were a better team. The Clippers were a better team than Minnesota last season. That just proves how volatile it is.
And I'm not taking anything away from D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards, who were awesome in the second half of that game. But, like, I think they were still very fortunate that Paul George just, like, short-circuited when he saw Patrick Beverly and, like, Kawhi, whatever.
Play-in P.
But, you know, like, do you want to see do you want to see Steph Curry, LeBron James, Damian Lillard in a one game, like, fight for your life? Like, no, hell no. So it'll just be fascinating to see what happens there. I still think the most likely scenario is that Memphis ends up as the three seed and the Wolves end up as the sixth seed. Like, this just feels destined.
I can't handle another series against Memphis. Especially not when we sit here right now after Memphis just waxed Minnesota.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Rudy Gobert kind of dominated the last game that they played, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
Steven Adams being back is a good thing for Minnesota. They need Steven Adams. Minnesota play better when Steven Adams plays. And I love Steven Adams, but, like, he is mince meat when Minnesota play, because Cat will cook him, or Gobert will be able to guard him and not have to guard these athletic, you know, guys who run around like Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, Steven Adams missing is actually, it's a bad thing for Memphis, but a bad thing for Minnesota too.
And the good thing that I don't think people have talked about a ton is the best version of this Wolves defense has been when Gobert has kind of been that floating low man.
Yeah.
Not when they've been playing a drop, when they've kind of done a switching concept up top or a high wall concept up top, and Gobert's been that low man. They can kind of stick him in the dunker on somebody. And if you have Steven Adams there, like, you can have Kat and Jaden McDaniels and John Morant's grill, and Rudy Gobert or Kyle Anderson is at the rim. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's,
yeah.
I think Minnesota is much better equipped to handle Memphis defensively. I think tonight they didn't want to play high wall with Conley. I think it was just kind of like, play what you're familiar with. It'll be interesting to see how that develops and Cat's back. But
I'll let you go. It was very nice to see you, Jack, and very nice to talk some Wolves finally. We need to get this going a bit more regularly now that I have a bit more time and you're stuck inside in winter. Well, it's still winter there, you're stuck inside. I'm stuck inside because it's so fucking hot here. But it's good to see you, man.
Absolutely, man. Especially with all these road games, and I won't be at games. I think anytime you want me, you got me.
Lovely. All right. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next time.